Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition, for Saturday, August 8th and Sunday, August the 9th. As always, we'll start on our front page with today's headline, or top headline, Danville's Astronaut Comes Home. Tanner to make appearances at Danville High and Museum, and this comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski. Dateline Danville, have you ever wanted to meet a NASA astronaut? This weekend, you have the chance to do so. Joseph R. Tanner will be holding a speaking engagement, Mastodons to the Moon, at Danville High School on Saturday and a meet and greet on Sunday at the Vermilion County Museum. For those of you that are listening to me on Monday, obviously you've missed this event, but let's check in to see what it was all about. Saturday's events start at 2 p.m. in the Dick Van Dyke Auditorium. Sundays will be from 1:30 to 4. Sue Richter from the Vermilion County Museum is spearheading the events. This is actually going to be the first time that Joe's given the presentation to the general public, Richter said. He's come back before, and he's done, you know, Rotary and those kinds of things. He's gone to different school groups and that, but he's never appeared to the general public to do his program before. On Sunday, there will be a meet and greet and photo opportunities for anyone free of charge at the County Museum. Additionally, attendees can explore the museum's rich history with light refreshments. Then on Sunday, the kids that come can have their picture taken with them, Richter said, calling everybody to bring their cell phones, get a picture taken with a real astronaut. Tanner is a 1968 graduate of Danville High School and an Eagle Scout from Troop 19, a graduate from the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana with a Bachelor's of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering in 1973. Then the Danville native joined the U.S. Navy in 1975, and from there he was accepted into the NASA Astronauts Corps in 1992. Tanner has flown the following missions: Space Shuttle Atlantis on STS-66, Space Shuttle Discover on STS-82, Space Shuttle Endeavour on STS-97, and Space Shuttle Atlantis on STS-115. Tanner also worked in the Aerospace Engineering Science Department at the University of Colorado in Boulder as an instructor. Tanner is quite humble despite all of his accomplishments. He recently was inducted into the United States NASA Hall of Fame in Florida this past May. Prior to that, he won an array of awards from the U.S. Navy, NASA, and the University of Illinois. Tanner says the museum asked him a couple of years ago to come. The 200th anniversary of Vermilion County is a milestone worth celebrating, Tanner said. I'm happy to join the Vermilion County Museum in their celebration of events. As for getting asked questions this weekend, Tanner already knows the one. Oh my goodness, I guess he's going to help. We will be held in suspense by what question he gets asked. Literally, the article stops right there. I guess we'll never know. Moving on to our next story. On the front page, Danville dismisses arrested teacher. This too comes to us from Christy Jankowski. The District 118 School Board unanimously approved the dismissal of Jordan Ritchie after his arrest for charges of aggravated criminal sexual abuse as a person of trust. I move to approve the resolution to dismiss tenured teacher Jordan Ritchie from employment and to suspend Jordan Ritchie without pay, Dr. Darlene Halloran, the school board president, said on Wednesday, pending a request for a formal Illinois State Board of Education dismissal hearing. Ritchie, 27, was arrested on July 1st. Danville Police Deputy Chief Doug Miller said Ritchie was taken into custody as part of an ongoing criminal investigation at that time. As with any criminal case, Ritchie is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Ritchie was also involved with DLO Music Theater. They were told, like the school district, to make no public comments due to the ongoing investigation. The theater organization said they are constantly reviewing and refining the guidelines and procedures that our volunteers must comply with. Currently, background checks are executed on all volunteers that work with children. Ritchie is currently not in custody, but on pretrial release. He must appear in court to keep his pretrial release, and he is also not allowed to have any contact with a victim directly or indirectly. Ritchie is also not to have any communication with former students regarding the alleged victim and the case. Anyone with information related to the investigation is encouraged to contact the Danville Police Department or to report a tip at Vermilion County Crime Stoppers. Our final article on page one today is Gaylor named cheerleading coach at Illinois, and this comes to us from reporter Chad Dare. Michaela Gaylor grew up with Hail to the Orange ringing in her ears. and just the lyrics, "We love no other." Gaylor has always loved the athletic teams for the Fighting Illini, so much so that when she attended the University of Illinois, she was a member of the cheerleading team, serving as a two-time captain. Growing up just outside Champaign, I always dreamt of one day wearing orange and blue, and my experience as a Fighting Illini cheerleader shaped me into the leader I am today, she said. On Thursday, the Illinois Division of Intercollegiate Athletics announced it was hiring Gaylor as the school's next cheerleading coach. In addition to leading the Fighting Illini cheerleading program, the former Oakwood graduate will also serve a role with the athletics department in marketing and fan engagement. Must be marketing and fan engagement. Illinois is revamping the position to have a full-time job in the athletic department, said Gaylor in a phone interview from Denver. I will be helping with marketing, fan engagement, and community outreach. I want to evaluate the fan experience at Illinois games. And how does she plan to do that? I think I'm in a unique position, and we can use the cheerleading team to help with that, she said, noting they will be part of more community events and making more appearances at alumni events. I also think the cheerleaders can help with student engagement and getting the Greek life to games. There are a lot of new ideas being thrown around. Gaylor acknowledged that becoming a cheerleading coach at the collegiate level wasn't something she really thought about after graduating from Illinois in 2020. I moved out to Denver after I graduated with my bachelor's in nursing and started working at the Children's Hospital of Colorado, Gaylor said. I worked in the pediatric emergency department, and the last 3 years I have worked at a medical spa. But earlier this summer, longtime cheerleading coach Stephanie Record posted on social media she was retiring. About a month ago, Coach Stephanie posted in our alumni group that she was retiring and asked if any alumni were interested to reach out to her, Gaylor said. I had chatted with her and applied 2 weeks ago. I had an interview and I found out Monday that I got the job. I feel like it's a dream job that I never thought I would have the opportunity to have. When she posted about it, I knew I wanted that. I couldn't miss it. After graduation, Gaylor has remained involved in cheerleading, serving as the Universal Cheerleaders Association instructor, coaching athletes from the elementary through collegiate levels throughout the Midwest while teaching technical skills, leadership, sportsmanship, and team culture. She also has volunteered as a coach with Oakwood School District and VC Tumbling and Cheer, mentoring athletes, assisting competitive teams, evaluating tryouts, and leading skill development and leadership training. Once I started nursing school, I never thought I would have a job like this, Gaylor said. In the interview process, I told Illinois that I was very passionate about coaching and cheerleading, but I wouldn't take this job at any other university. Illinois Athletics is a program and a university that I'm so very passionate about. Congratulations, Michaela. Continuing with local news, name change for Mark Denman School. This comes to us from Christy Jankowski. Once the Mark Denman Elementary School, now it's the Mark Denman Learning Center. The Danville District 118 Board approved the name change unanimously at Wednesday's meeting. Good evening, Board. I would like to welcome all of you to come to our open house. I'm Rachel Weber, the principal at Mark Denman, she said. The kindergarten open house is going to be on Wednesday, August 12th. We'll also be having a pre-K open house. I'd like to give a shout out to all our district departments, she added, noting that they've leaned on everyone this summer while making the change. But I have to give the biggest shout out in the world to our district buildings and grounds department. We have had a huge overhaul in our building and they've done a fantastic job. School Board President Darlene Halloran said the name change was appropriate for Denman. It begins the education of all of our kids, and that's very fitting for Mr. Denman, Halloran said. Superintendent John Hart spoke about how keeping the name was important. Mark Denman was a huge part of this district, and it was such an honor for him to have a school named after him, Hart said, and we would like to continue with that. It was very apparent in talking to our staff that keeping the name Mark Denman was something that they were adamant about. Didn't have to ask. We were told they really liked the name. It makes sense to me. And look at the money we're saving on branding, Hart added. Recently, the board approved moving all of their kindergarten students to the Denman building. The board did not address whether or not the roof has been fixed or the cost to fix it, but it does appear to be in good shape to welcome students starting out their school career. The roof was damaged by high winds in June. Part of the gymnasium roof was found across the street, while part of it lodged into a house. The preliminary reports of damage to the roof from the NWS were 20%. Mark Denman is still heavily involved in the community throughout his work at the Illiana Genealogical Society. He began his teaching career in the building, and he appreciates what the district has done. I certainly didn't expect it, nor did I deserve it, Denman said, but certainly a thoughtful recognition. And again, Mark Denman Elementary School, moving on to Mark Denman Learning Center as a place for our kindergarten students to start their journey in education. We do have an article from the state at the state level that we looked at, I believe it was either last week or the previous week, as it relates to Representative Carol Ammons from Urbana. The Illinois House begins their investigation into the Ammons. And if it's Ammons, I'm sorry, I will say Ammons, you all hear it the way it's correct. Illinois lawmakers on Thursday began investigating alleged misconduct by Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat Urbana, that was outlined in a federal indictment. Ammons pleaded not guilty on July 16th to 10 felony charges, including wire fraud, lying to the FBI, and conspiring to obstruct justice. Her husband, Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons, also faces a conspiracy charge. Their daughter, Titiana Ammons, was not charged in the case despite being a key figure at the center of it, though she's facing separate federal unemployment fraud charges. The House Special Investigating Committee was triggered by a Republican petition that largely mirrored the indictment, alleging Ammons engaged in inappropriate and illegal behavior. While the committee will decide whether the 11-year state representative engaged in conduct unbecoming of a legislator, it's just the first step in a long process that could ultimately lead to her punishment. And after introducing the House Republicans' charges against Ammons, the committee voted unanimously to consult with the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of Illinois to find out if the committee's actions would interfere with the federal investigation. The committee will not meet again or conduct a deeper investigation until the U.S. Attorney responds. Past special investigating committees into former Governor Rod Blagojevich, former Representative Derek Smith, and former Speaker Mike Madigan also contacted the investigating U.S. Attorney before proceeding. Ammons' indictment. Federal prosecutors allege that starting in 2017, Ammons and her daughter received financial benefit in excess of $100,000 via a scheme including illegal payments from the Friends of Carol Ammons campaign account and from payments made to Titiana Ammons by local nonprofits that received state grant funds arranged by the lawmaker. Representative Ammons declined through her attorneys to attend Thursday's open hearing because it was only going to be a procedural step, committee Chair Representative Curtis Tarver of Chicago said. The House rules give Ammons a right to attend each hearing, introduce her own evidence, and testify to the committee. As members of the Illinois House of Representatives, we are held to a higher ethical standard, and we must hold each other to that high ethical standard as we make sure to take care of this institution, Representative C.D. Davids Meyer, Republican from Murrayville, said as he introduced the GOP's petition to initiate the investigation. 11 Republicans signed a slimmed-down petition that tasked the committee with investigating 5 counts that Ammons abused state funds. Their initial petition contained 9 charges, which included campaign finance law violations. Davidsmeyer said the GOP decided to focus on violations related to state tax dollars, believing issues surrounding campaign contributions and lying to federal agents could be explored another time. This committee is not a court of law, and we are not judging innocence or guilt, Tarver said. Rather, we're tasked with inquiring into the underlying facts to determine whether reasonable grounds exist for the discipline to be pursued by the House. Trust in the process. The committee is made up of 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans, but chaired by Tarver, a Democrat. When one of our members is the subject of a criminal indictment based on allegations of a wire fraud, false statements to the FBI, and conspiracy to obstruct justice, there's a direct threat to the public trust in this very institution, Tarver said. The last committee to investigate a lawmaker, the 2020 investigation into Madigan, more than a year before he would be federally charged, was criticized by members of both parties for different reasons. Then-Representative Chris Welch, the Hillside Democrat who led that committee, said courts were a better place of determining wrongdoing. Republicans bashed that characterization and the Democrats' decision to conclude the committee's work without finding Madigan engaged in unethical behavior. The people of Illinois deserve answers, and above all, they deserve the truth, Representative Evan Nieberg, a Republican from Dietrich, said. This committee cannot become another Springfield exercise in delays, doublespeak excuses, and more political projections for insiders. Decades of scandal have destroyed the public's trust in state government. Davidsmeyer voiced confidence in Tarver's leadership. I think Chairman Tarver will do a good job, he told reporters. I have a lot of respect in how he looks at things. We may not always agree, but we can at least have conversations on these things. So I'll think this should be a good committee. It will be a little bit more robust than the committee that was kind of swept under the rug for Speaker Madigan. We're now at the midway point of our time together today. Let's take a look at the obituary that was received by Friday at 5 p.m. There is one today. Michael Barnes. Michael Mike S. Barnes, 55 of Danville, passed away peacefully on the afternoon of August 3rd at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, surrounded by his siblings who will miss him dearly. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Tuesday, August 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. A funeral service will immediately follow the visitation, beginning at 11 a.m. also at the funeral home. Miles Clark will be officiating. Online condolences and fond memories can be shared with Mike's family on his tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Well, let's turn our attention now to the editorial page with today's editorial headline, school days, dear old golden rule days. If you know that, you're old, like me. Danville District 118 students will head out the door Thursday to begin another school year, with other districts in the same area following suit soon if they haven't started already. That means a major change in family schedules and the addition of buses and children walking to school early in the morning. All District 118 students should be registered already. Their first day will end an hour early, with the regular schedule beginning in earnest on Friday. Again this year, the district will provide book bags for all students, with pupils in kindergarten through 8th grade also receiving school supplies to start the year. All District 118 schools or students also can eat breakfast and lunch for free. For information, visit the district's website at district118.org or call the food service director at 217-444-1070. Students in other schools should check with their respective district office for information. District 118 elementary students begin classes at 7:45 a.m., which means buses and those who walk to school will be on local streets even earlier. Local drivers will need to be extra alert for the next few weeks until everyone settles into their routines. Children walking to school, especially younger ones, don't always think about safety when crossing streets. As we get closer to the end of the year, the mornings will become darker as the sun rises later, creating even greater hazards for everyone. Creating routines also plays an important role in children's success in the classroom. The Kids Mental Health Foundation finds that routines such as getting ready for school, doing homework, or preparing for bed at the same time each day helps children feel safe and helps reduce conflict. New habits take practice, so don't expect children to go along with the changes right away. Establishing routines to get ready for school always can help create free time for parents as children begin to take on tasks themselves, such as getting dressed and gathering items to take to school. Perhaps the most important routine families can establish is support for education and teachers. Parents who are unjustly critical of teachers or who place little importance on schoolwork do a huge disservice to their children. Public education can open all sorts of doors of opportunity for those who work hard to succeed. Learning reading, math, and other skills in the classroom leads to better jobs. Parents who disparage schools often hurt their children's future. Knowledge is a wonderful thing. It should be encouraged, not criticized. Studies show students whose parents are involved in their education perform better in the classroom, experiencing fewer behavioral problems, and develop better social skills, according to Pacific Oaks College in Pasadena, California. Help your child become a successful adult and support their efforts in this classroom. Also help our students arrive at school in good form. Please pay extra special care as you're driving around during these first few weeks of school. Our second editorial comes today from Don Richter, who is a Vermilion County columnist. And this actually appeared not in the editorial section, but on page A2, so on the second page of the paper today. And with that, I think there's, you know, because it ran in a different space, perhaps the newspaper wanted it to have some different import. So I think that we'll take a moment and see what Don Richter has to say. The headline on his editorial is Patriotism Ran High in Vermilion County. I feel more like fighting than preaching, Reverend James L. Crane told his congregation at the Methodist Church in Danville on Sunday, April 21st, 1861. Crane's war sermon was reportedly interrupted several times by cheers. President Lincoln had issued his call for 75,000 three-month volunteers to put down the rebellion by Southern states a few days earlier. Reverend Crane was described as an original and bold minister. He was not a young man, but he would answer Lincoln's call to arms and serve a few months as a chaplain with the 21st Illinois Infantry. Patriotism reigned in Vermilion County in those early days after Lincoln announced he would not allow the Union to be shattered. Women had already moved their sewing machines into the Methodist Church basement in Danville to make shirts and other garments for soldiers. 2 days later, a mass meeting was held at Lincoln Hall on Danville's Main Street to bid farewell to a company of three-month men raised by Sam Frazier. People filled the hall, and the glee club sang the Star Spangled Banner. A number of speeches were made, including one by Miss Ada Terry. She presented the 12th Infantry Company a flag that had been made by the women of Danville. Terry was credited with giving a fine speech of encouragement to the men, noting they were serving the Union as their fathers and grandfathers had in years gone by. One of the other speakers was Dr. James Ferris. He was a popular physician in Danville, and he told those gathered he would go to attend the soldiers, even if he was not selected as a Union surgeon. Vermilion County Press publisher James D. Kilpatrick noted the people were unified for their country. He estimated a man who stood against the Stars and Stripes would not last 5 minutes. This was an overly optimistic statement, for there were residents of Vermilion County who opposed the war that was breaking out between North and South. Dr. James Ferris, ironically, would be one of those. He would serve 3 months as surgeon with Sam Frazier's newly formed infantry company, but he would turn against the Union in later years. He would violently oppose the war, but in the spring of 1861, he became a Union soldier. In Georgetown, where a Union rally was held in April, the Stars and Stripes flew from housetops and patriotic banners were stretched across the street. The banners carried the message, Union and Constitution forever. The Georgetown rally began in the public square with a 34-gun salute, one for each state. Then three cheers were given for the flag and three for the Union. The purpose of the meeting was to show support for President Lincoln and the Union in the war it was about to fight. The assemblage proved a written proclamation stating this fact. Then a call for volunteers to join the army was made, and it was responded to promptly by 22 young men from the vicinity. Similar rallies were also held in other places, including Dallas, Salina, Myersville, Bluegrass, and Conkeytown. An April meeting in Ridge Farm was well attended. A number of speakers addressed the gathering, each strongly supporting the Union cause. Mark Hawes was one of the speakers at the event. When the call was made for volunteers, 11 men stepped forward. Ridge Farm was the home of Abraham Smith, who operated a station on the Underground Railroad for many years. Numerous slaves bound for freedom passed through Smith's station. One of his opponents in the 1840s when slavery was debated was Dr. A.M. Hawes of Georgetown, Mark Hawes' father. Smith described Dr. Hawes as one of the most eloquent speakers he debated, but noted he was supporting a bad cause. In 1861, Dr. Hawes was a supporter of the Union. His son Mark would raise a company for the 73rd Illinois and go to war with them. His daughter would later marry a Union veteran. Bands were playing as men were recruited, and flags were flying in the villages and in the county seat of Danville. Young women were busily sewing flags for men who would soon be leaving for what they thought would be a short war. Nearly bloodless, some forecast. Spirits were high in the county as the first company of men left for war. The tall attorney who had been entertaining with his stories at the McCormick House in Danville a few years earlier was now President of the United States. He would discover very soon 75,000 troops were not nearly enough to reunite the Union. Vermilion County men would discover the war would not be bloodless or short. And this came to us from, again, from columnist Don Richter from Vermilion County. Well, we've talked about local news. We've looked a little bit at what's going on in our state. We've had some editorial comment from those that are in our communities. The last place we need to look today is sports. Let's take a look at what Marvin Holman has to say. His headline, top headline for today in the sports section, Fully Loaded, Trojans Prepare to Make Some Noise. And again, this comes to us from Marvin Holman, and this is Dateline Covington, Indiana. With a lot of the players having at least a year of varsity experience, the Covington football team is looking to do better than last season's 5-5 record. We are pretty loaded. We have a good group that has been working hard for a long time now, Covington head coach Justin Wheeler said. We should have a good group of seniors. They're a joy to coach, they work hard, they're committed, and they do everything you can ask. The offense will return with its backfield, quarterback Bo Bishop and running back Sully Stadler. We have major weapons as far as athletes, and we have a real strong line that is more experienced from last year, Wheeler said. They were strong, but they were novices in game experience. Playing all season and getting cohesive, I think we'll handle the line of scrimmage very well. We're a more positive and confident team, Stadler said. We have people who played their position last year, and they're confident. Last year, I knew the organization and the people, and I met people from other schools and how they play football here. We have a lot of returning juniors, a good team of seniors. I think we'll have a good team this year. Bishop said last season was one of learning new things, something that will not be the case this season. We put it together more by the end of the year, Bishop said. We had an entire new offense, and we looked new and did not have enough experience, but we were able to bring it together. We have 8 returning guys on offense, and we have almost everyone back on defense. I think we're pretty solid, and I'm excited about what can happen this season. Well, best of wishes to Covington as they look to a new season this year. Indiana schools are clearly a little bit ahead of us as they're starting. So we have another article. Kronk returns to lead Seeger, and this too comes from Marvin Holman. When the Seeger coaching position opened up, Kronk was more than happy to take over for TJ Reagan and return to a place where he's played and coached. And this comes to us, by the way, from West Lebanon, Indiana. 40 years ago, I was a senior at Seeger High School, and I've lived in the community my whole life, Kronk said. I coached here from 1999 to 2013 as an assistant coach. The last 11 years, I was in Lafayette. My oldest grandson is going to be a 7th grader for Seeger, so it was time and a chance to get close to friends and family. The Patriots under Reagan went 27-16 in 4 seasons with a 9-2 record last year, the most for Seeger since the 2006 team won 10 games. The only problem is not many Patriots returned from that team. They graduated 13 seniors. They were talented and had a great year, Kronk said. They are high expectations, but we're a long way from being good now. The cupboard is not entirely bare with quarterback Jacob Saltz returning under center. He's poised to have a great year. He's leading from the front. He's in the weight room and is working hard and getting bigger, faster, and stronger, Kronk said. I have Aiden Handy, who's a senior, is a throwback type player, and we are expecting great things from him. We have players that haven't played in the last few years come out. They're explosive, and we will have to do our job of giving them the ball. Kronk is one of 3 new coaches in the area, but he knows of the rivalries and knows about the future. He wants the Patriots to continue to be mentioned among the top in Wabash River Conference. There's quite a bit of turnover. It's been a while since I've been part of WRC football, but there are a lot of natural rivalries, Kronk said. I'm eager to get into those games. My goal is to return Seeger to the early 2000s with those expectations. You knew when you played Seeger you had to strap it up. We have to get back to those fundamentals and have hard-nosed kids that can play for each other, and if we do, and we can, and we get it right, success will come from that. The Patriots start the season on August 21st against Carroll, and Kronk is ready to see how the team will do. We also have a little bit of news coming out of the Illini. Illinois men's golf announces schedule. University of Illinois head coach and Danville native Mike Small announced the schedule for the team on Thursday. Each year we strive to put together a schedule that really challenges the team both mentally and physically. As we grow and prepare for the postseason, I'm very excited about this year's tournament lineup, Small said. We'll consistently compete on top-rated courses against the best teams in college golf, including hosting the 20th playing of our own premier event at Olympia Fields. I'm also very excited to once again host the Fighting Illini Spring Collegiate at Atkins Golf Club. This schedule will give us every opportunity to reach our team goals, and I can't wait to get back on the course with this team. The season starts with the Sahali Players Championship in Washington and the 20th annual OFCC Fighting Illini Invitational in Olympia Fields in September and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish Classic and the Fallen Oak Collegiate Invitational in Mississippi in October. When we look at Illini College Soccer, Illini to appear twice on BTN, the Big Ten Network is announcing their broadcast schedule for the upcoming 2026 season on Thursday, and Illinois will be coming into the season ranked number 9. They'll be playing on BTN 2 times on August 27th, playing at St. Louis, and then October 8th at USC. Well, we are about out of time today. Let's take a look at what our week looks like as far as weather. Lots of clouds. We don't even have a purely sunny day all week, but it looks like lots of chances for rain this week. On Monday, mostly cloudy with a thunderstorm and hot at high of 90. Tuesday and Wednesday, showers and heavy thunderstorms will roll through, highs in the mid-80s. Thursday, it's going to be humid. They still have a thunderstorm that may hang around in the morning. with a high of 79. And we're back on Friday to a cloudy day with a few showers with a high around 80. So it's kind of the summer wet spell. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. I look forward to reading again with you soon. Have a great week.